Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. Well, it's getting to be that time of year, at least in our neck of the woods, where it's warm outside and people want to go outside and have fun. So we're going to talk about sports today, and in particular, how blind people can play a modified form of baseball.
We'll speak with Blake Boudreau and Stephen Guerra of the National Beep Baseball Association about how the game is played, what special equipment is used, and the upcoming World Series of Beep Baseball. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip is team sports can be good opportunities for physical exercise, as well as many other benefits, including social opportunities and sometimes even a chance to travel. Here are Blake and Stephen.
People who aren't familiar with it, which if you've never heard a show like yours or you've never seen it on TV, on some of the specials that ESPN ran or CBS Sunday Morning, you really have no idea what it's all about. And to really hear the details about it or see how it's actually played, it's a world of difference from what generally pops into people's heads about blind baseball. So it's very competitive. That's the thing that a lot of people don't realize when just hearing blind baseball. They think it's more of a recreational activity, which there are few recreational teams around at different camps and schools for the blind, but this is very competitive. We take it very seriously, and it's a legitimate sport, and people really enjoy watching it once they get a picture of what it's actually about.
We're blessed to have teams throughout the United States in almost every large city. So if you're really interested in knowing about what teams are available, if you want to possibly join in a team, again, you check out NBBA.org and check out our teams page.
We currently have two teams from Taiwan. We have a team from the Dominican Republic, and we have a team in Canada. And we're looking to expand globally.
So stay with us and learn more about Beep Baseball.
Hey, take me out to the ball game. Out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back.
Well, that wasn't our usual breaker tune, but we're going to be talking about baseball today, and every American knows that song from any baseball game they've ever been to. Let's start by meeting Stephen Blake.
I'm Steve Guerra. I'm the secretary for the National Beep Baseball Association. Have been holding this office since 2006. I've been involved actively in the league since 2001. I've been playing beep baseball on and off with different teams since 1988. Have been involved with sports for the blind and visually impaired since 1985.
And what's your educational and employment background?
Was mainstreamed in public schools all the way through since the time I lost my sight. Went to Hofstra University down in Long Island, New York for college. Moved to Rochester, Minnesota back in 2008. I am an independent contractor for the state of Minnesota and also a federal program known as ICANN Connect, which enables both blind, low vision, and deafblind individuals the opportunity of learning and communicating effectively with technology in the commercial and normal workplaces.
Do you have any usable vision yourself?
I have none. Mm-hmm. I am completely, totally blind and have been for 40 years.
And Blake?
I'm Blake Boudreau from Houston, Texas. Just to give you a little background about myself, I was diagnosed with retinoblastoma, which is cancer of the eyes, at age 14 months. The cancer returned when I was 3. I lost, at that time, it was a good amount of vision. All the vision in my left eye and a cataract had formed in the right that they weren't able to remove. So by the time I was 4 or 5 years old, I was basically seeing shadows and basic movement. Went to public school, was very active in sports. I was the first blind football player in the Houston area to start for a varsity football team. My parents never took pity on me. They treated me just like my brother and sister and were very understanding, but very strict in the fact that they didn't want me to use my blindness as a crutch. Some good news, in 2009, I was able to have surgery that restored some of my vision. I'm now still legally blind, but I can read print and do a lot of things I wasn't able to do before. So it's been pretty exciting.
And what was your educational and professional background?
After graduating high school, I attended Texas A&M University and graduated with a degree in speech communications and sociology. And I decided to take a pretty exciting path that I never thought I would take, and that is working with people who are blind and visually impaired to regain their independence. I've been working for the state of Texas for 7 years in various roles, but currently I'm an independent living coordinator, and I go out to individuals' homes and teach them Braille and basically how to get back on their feet after recently losing their vision. So it's a very exciting job.
How did you first get involved in Beep Baseball?
My Beep Baseball background started when I was 10 years old, which is very rare. Our sport has some youth, but it's a rarity. So I started at the age of 10, and this is going to be my 21st year playing for the same team here in Houston. 5 years ago, I was elected to the board, and this past year, I was elected as second vice president of the National Beep Baseball Association and the chair of public relations. Beep baseball has been near and dear to my heart. I didn't know what to expect as a 10-year-old when I went out there, but I got to grow up with older, blind, and visually impaired individuals who laid the groundwork for me in terms of my life. I got to look up to them as role models and learned a lot. My dad became our coach the second year I was playing. I played under my dad for 17 years, which was a wonderful experience, a stressful experience at times, but it was a great opportunity. It was a bonding situation, and we just love the sport.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
This week's focus topic is Beep Baseball and how it differs from mainstream baseball or softball. Here's a quick sample.
Here's the pitch from Cochran. That ball's driven deep to left center field. That's deep and high. Quintanilla's got a good line to the base. He looks like he is gonna score. Walk off run for Joe Quintanilla.
I guess you can tell why they call it Beep Baseball from that clip. You can hear that ball beeping away, but we'll learn more about that later.
For our listeners who may not be familiar with mainstream baseball, here's a really quick description of the game from Wikipedia. Baseball is a bat and ball game played between two teams of 9 players each who take turns batting and fielding. The offense attempts to score runs by hitting a ball thrown by the pitcher with a bat and moving counterclockwise around a series of 4 bases, first, second, third, and home plate. A run is scored when a player advances around the bases and returns to home plate. Players on the batting team take turns hitting against the pitcher of the fielding team, which then tries to prevent runs by getting hitters out in any of several ways. The teams switch between batting and fielding whenever the fielding team scores 3 outs. One turn batting for each team, beginning with the visiting team, constitutes an inning. A game comprises 9 innings, and the team with the greater number of runs at the end of the game wins. Well, Beep Baseball is a little bit different.
So we wanted to introduce our listeners to Beep Baseball, and some of them may not be familiar with what Beep Baseball is. Can you give an overview of what this is all about?
Beep Baseball is a adapted version of the game of softball and baseball, which is played within the United States on many levels, from kids all the way up through professional sports. Essentially, though, beep baseball is played with a ball that's 5 inches in diameter and it weighs about 16 ounces. And it emits a rapid beep and has a mechanism in the middle of the ball that when you pull a pin from the top of the ball, it engages the beep and continues to beep until you put the pin back inside.
By contrast, a hard ball or baseball is about 3 inches in diameter. A standard softball is about 4 inches in diameter. But there is a variant of softball that's usually played without gloves or mitts, and that uses the same size ball as in beep baseball that's about 5 inches in diameter.
So we know how the blind players can find the ball. How do they know where the bases are?
The bases that are used in beep baseball emit a solid, straight tone of a beep as opposed to a rapid beep.
Can you explain how beep baseball is played and how it differs from mainstream baseball or softball?
Beep baseball is played on a grass field, a soccer field, if you will, approximately 200 feet by 200 feet. baseball, when you hit the ball, you have to run to first, second, and third base, and then home to score a run. With beat baseball, the object is that once the ball is hit, you have to reach either first or third base, because that's where the bases are located, down first and third base line, approximately 100 feet from home plate. And if you get to the base before the fielders in beat baseball field the ball, then it's a run for your team. If they field the ball prior to you getting to the base, it's an out. Everyone on the playing field of beat baseball, whether it be the defense or the batter, are blindfolded in order to level the playing field. There are six people on each team at a time. Of course, teams like to have reserves available in case someone gets hurt. So sometimes teams can range from either 8 to even as many as 18 players. The bases, as I mentioned, are 100 feet down first and third baseline. There is no second base at all, so that's to avoid any possible injuries and or collisions amongst the players on the field and the batter. And the bases are also 10 feet in foul territory. Again, in order to prevent any injury of the batter running onto the playing field itself.
Oh, so this keeps the fielders essentially isolated from the runners, so it minimizes collisions.
Absolutely. There are collisions. Sometimes people do run into the field of play and the umpires and any of the volunteers on either team will just say stop and everything stops. And at that point, because the batter interfered with the game of play in terms of the ball onto the ball field, then it would be an out. And or if the defense person came into the foul territory to get a ball, then that would be interfering with the batter getting to the base. So then the batting team would be awarded a run.
So in traditional baseball, the batter hits the ball, runs to the base, and he can be out if the fielder tags or touches the base before the runner gets there. But I take it in this case, that's not the rule. How is the play terminated?
The play is terminated, and I'll use Blake as an example. Blake hits a line drive, and it bounces down the third baseline, fair ball. And all deep left fielder from the Minnesota Millers dives across the grass that he's playing on and has the ball hit him in his stomach. He picks up the ball and shows possession to the umpire that, hey, I have the ball, and Blake hasn't gotten himself to the base yet, and then Blake is out. And that's the end of that play.
So as soon as the fielder gets the ball, that's the end of the play, and the base runner has to get to the base before the fielder catches the ball or has the ball in his possession.
That's correct, and that's all within about a six-second time frame.
I'm curious, in regular baseball or softball, there's a pitcher in the middle of the field who throws the ball to the batter, and then the batter has to hit the ball in motion. If everybody's blind, how does that work?
We do have sighted volunteers who help out with each team, the most important of which are a sighted pitcher, a sighted catcher, and sighted spotters who are in the field. Some teams have used one spotter in the field. Others have used two. The pitcher stands 20 feet away, and it's his goal to get the members of his team to hit the baseball. So the pitcher is on your team. In order to hit the baseball, there's two things that need to happen. The pitcher needs to place the ball where your swing is, and there's a timing factor. The pitchers will have a cadence. Some pitchers will use ready, set, pitch. Others will use ready, set, ball. So you have to wait for the proper timing with your pitcher. And also it's the pitcher's job to place the ball where your swing is. So you have to make sure to swing in the same place every time.
And just so this is clear for our international listeners, in traditional baseball, the pitcher is on the opposite team from the ball hitter. And the goal is exactly the opposite. The pitcher wants to make the batter miss the ball.
Correct.
But you're making it easy for the batter to connect with the ball in this case.
Correct. And it's a very skilled position. It takes years and years for someone to get good enough to be able to place the ball to each of his individual batters.
You talked about the pitchers pitching the ball so that the batters can hit the ball. In traditional baseball, you have this concept of if you swing at the ball too many times and miss, you'll be out. Or if the pitcher pitches it too far away from the batter can automatically get the base and, you know, kind of score in some sense. What are the rules there in terms of beat baseball? Is there any way of striking out, or you just wait until someone hits the ball?
In beat baseball, we have four strikes and one pass ball. You cannot walk in beat baseball, as you cannot bunt in beat baseball, but you can strike out.
You mentioned one or two spotters per team. What's their function?
are two-sided spotters in the field. They have a very important position as well. Their job is to call out a number after the ball is hit. So they will call out a number which correlates to a different zone on the field so that you're able to kind of pinpoint where that ball is going to be headed. They're only allowed to say one number, and that's it. They're not allowed to say anything else.
And they're not allowed to talk at the same time. So if the ball's hit to the left side, if you have a two-field spotter system, then the field spotter on the left-hand side will call that number where the right field spotter will just keep their mouth shut. Because if you have a double call like that, again, that's an infraction and could serve to allow the other team to get a free run.
So this not only helps the fielder know where the ball is going to wind up after it's hit, but I guess it also helps prevent collisions between fielders that might be going for the same ball.
That's correct. And either the umpire or the spotters will yell stop if they see a collision about to take place. So they're human. They can only catch so much, but that is their job as well.
So you don't put anything that makes noise on the players. You just have the ball and the bases making noise.
That's correct. And it can be scary at times. You know, our team is filled with a lot of big individuals. Myself, I'm 6'4" and probably about around 250 pounds. And I'm a pretty big guy. We have a player who's 6'8" and probably 280 pounds. So we have very large men who are running towards a beeping baseball. And it gets scary at times, but it's very exciting to watch.
I would try to stay out of your way. I'm about 5'7" and 135 pounds.
And I'm even shorter and lighter than he is.
I have collided with teammates. We've both come out of it alive and in one piece. But that is our job as well as players, to make sure to communicate with our teammates in the field. And a lot of practice and a lot of years together will allow you to get that down to a science. And we don't have many collisions with our veteran players. So,
do the players wear any protective gear?
It's subjective to the individual. There are people who have had previous head injuries that they'll opt to wear a helmet. I've seen someone from a local area Minnesota recreational team come out with football shoulder pads. Trust me, when you're out in the sun, you try to wear as little as possible to try to keep yourself as cool as possible, because you're also wearing a blindfold. Every player is wearing a blindfold. So that makes you even hotter. And sometimes people don't even wear hats. You know, I wear a hat because I have a bald spot and I don't want to get sunburn on my head. Mm-hmm. Of course, as most of the individuals in the organization are men, we ask that they wear some sort of athletic support. However, it's, again, entirely up to them. We ask our pitchers to wear some type of face mask or something. But again, we leave that to the individual affiliate teams, as it's up to them to police their own people. A lot of pitchers will opt not to wear any face mask of any kind or helmet. We have a phenomenal pitcher who pitches now with the Carolina Warriors that has never worn anything. And when he pitched originally back with the Oklahoma City Bombers back in 2002, when he was playing Houston, Tim took a line drive off of his nose, broke his nose, put his nose back in place, taped it up, went on pitching.
Wow. You mentioned in passing that most of the players are men. Is this a co-ed sport? Can men and women participate?
Yes. We are blessed to have women in our sport that are phenomenal athletes. We have at least one woman on every team. There are some teams that don't. They certainly hold their own amongst all the men that they're playing with, and they're forces to be reckoned with on both sides of the ball. We appreciate and we welcome anyone who wants to play this sport with us, and we have people that range in age from the age of 15 or 16 years old all the way up to the age of 70.
Cool.
Wow. I would guess that the teams are pretty far apart. Do you just practice against your own team and then get together once a year for the tournament? Or are there clubs sufficiently close together that you can actually compete against other teams?
It's different for each team. In Houston, we're very lucky to have quite a few teams from the state of Texas. Right now, we currently have 6 teams. So that allows us to be able to practice and play scrimmage games against those teams. In all likelihood, once a month, we will play one of those teams. But other than that, we will play against ourselves. We will have a full practice. We will divide into 2 separate teams. And in that case, we will keep the same pitcher and catcher and spotters for each side. But it does give us more of a game scenario than just hitting the ball or playing defense.
We don't always get to practice as early as maybe teams in the Texas area because we don't have almost year-round warm weather. However, generally what we will try to do is practice amongst ourselves as much as we possibly can and try to get scrimmage games against a team from Iowa, or we'll attend probably one of the largest regional tournaments. And this is to answer your question specifically. There are a host of different regional tournaments throughout the year, starting in the beginning of June, going all throughout the month of June. But again, if anyone is able to participate in these regional tournaments, it just gives them greater opportunity to practice as a team and also to prepare long-term for the Beat Baseball World Series held every year.
So if you're willing to travel, you can see a little bit of the country and also meet some other teams.
What expenses are involved in playing Beat Baseball?
One of the downsides of Beat Baseball is the cost. The cost of the equipment, generally, essentially, to purchase 10 balls and a set of bases will set you back about $700. But the largest issue that most teams have is raising money so they can travel, one, primarily to the World Series, since it, you know, each team can play anywhere between 7 to 10 games at a Beat Baseball World Series. So then they'll weigh that versus going to a regional tournament where they might play 4 games. But if they have the funds to do both, then they try to do both as best they possibly can.
And this year's World Series is in our hometown of Rochester, New York.
That's correct. It's being held the week of July 26th through August 2nd, 2015, sponsored in part by David and Eileen Flom from the Flom Eye Institute, and also being ran by the Monroe County Sports Commission. And I've been asked to pass along to your listeners that if anyone who's living in the Rochester, New York area is interested in helping out as a volunteer or interested in the actual team that's being created there in Rochester, New York, they should email 2015 or 2015 at mbba.org. For the 2015 World Series, we're excited to have more teams than we've ever had before. The only other time that we've had more than 20 teams was in Palo Alto, California, 1986, where there was 22 teams. And I think 2015 is set to probably break that record, where at the very least right now, we have 2 teams coming from Taiwan, a team from Canada, hopefully a team from the Dominican Republic, and also a team from Rochester, New York. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of preparation. But the excitement of seeing that many games go on at one time during the Beat Baseball World Series is phenomenal. It's absolute pandemonium, but also complete excitement.
And the folks at the Rochester Radio Reading Service, WXXI Reach Out Radio, will also be helping to organize the event.
So this sounds like a pretty active sport. You must have to be in pretty good shape to be able to play Beat Baseball.
It takes a lot of endurance at this World Series for the teams who play into the final few. For instance, in 2002, the Houston team that I was a part of, we played a total of 10 games that year in Chicago, Illinois. And those games ranged from about 2.5 hours to over 4 hours apiece.
Wow.
So if you can imagine 10 games for that amount of time with constant diving on the ground, constant running to the bases, you have to be in very good shape. And even for the folks who are in the best shape they can possibly be, you're beat up and bruised and scraped up, and you have to fight through a lot of things during that week. And the heat is a big factor. Like I said, it takes a lot of endurance and a lot of will to get through it.
Let me root, root, root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. 'Cause it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Now for this week's final item, the specialized equipment used in Beat Baseball, including the eponymous beeping ball.
Maybe you can describe what the ball is actually like.
The ball is made by the Denver Beatball Group, led by Bob Kurtz, otherwise as the Telecom or CenturyLink pioneers. The original Beat Baseball was created by Charlie Fairbanks, who was then a telephone pioneer of America out of the Denver area. And he created the ball, in essence, for use by the Colorado School for the Deaf and Blind back in the 1964, 65, 66 range. The ball was turned over to them because they wanted to have the kids play amongst each other with a ball that emitted a sound. To tell you the truth, the device has not changed in how it's created and exactly how it emits the beep since the 1960s. it's withstood the test of time. The ball costs about $34, and it is sold globally.
Do you guys use a regulation bat?
We both take an inhale of breath because one of the things that maybe is a problem today more so than it has been in years past is that generally the ball weighs 16 ounces. So you want a bat that's going to move that ball out of the infield. And then there's something we didn't really touch upon before, but there's a line at 40 feet from home plate that the ball has to travel to be fair. Also, we do have a home run line, which is 170 feet from home plate. Bats really need to weigh a minimum of 32 ounces or more to drive that ball. And some of the better hitters use between 36 and 38 ounce bats, which are certainly hard to come by. Baseball uses wooden bats. The modern day softball use a lighter bat. Beat baseball is a whole different other scenario. You know, and finding those older bats that are those heavier weights maybe can be found on eBay, maybe can be found at a place like Played Against Sports, but it's really difficult to try to find those. And the reality is, if I use an older bat, is it going to break?
If people wanted to find out more about Beat Baseball and or get involved themselves, where would they go?
They can go to our website of www.mbba.org. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/NBBAPR or NBBA Public Relations, or on Twitter at NBBA. They can find a host of information on the NBBA.org website, and they can see the list of our teams that are registering for 2015. They can contact myself or Blake and any of the other officers and also board of directors. They can read our rules. They can see videos about Beat Baseball that have been gathered and or news stories. And of course, right on the homepage is a link to the 2015 Beat Baseball World Series. And if you want to have the opportunity to get in contact with the people who are running the World Series in Rochester, New York, again, they could email 2015@mbba.org.
Great. Well, that will all be in our show notes then. So again, if you want to learn more about this upcoming World Series or any of the contact information to get involved yourself, go to our show notes where you can find all that information at www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That's it for show number 1514. Well, just to give equal time to the rest of the world, next week's show will be about blind cricket. Jighay Mahantesh is the General Secretary of the Cricket Association for the Blind in India and Vice President of the World Blind Cricket Council. He is also one of the founders of the Samarthanam Trust for the Disabled, and we will speak with him about how the blind can play cricket, as well as about the mission of his organization and conditions for the blind in India. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com at Eyes on Success or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success and have a nice day.